our research director, Richard Marks, and I are joined by Chris Mundy, recently appointed CEO of RSMB, a data specialist company, or perhaps more especially specializing in data integration. RSMB, amongst other things, is responsible for maintaining quality control for many jigs. So we were interested to see how Chris felt about the challenges presented by the COVID-19 virus.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Chris. I think you're fairly well known in the UK in the media industry, but this is an international podcast. And I know your first ASI conference in November in terms of joining our particular community. But it'd be useful just to have a quick understanding of your background prior to joining RSMB and also, as they say, what attracted you to the role?
That sound like an interview question.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I served pretty much 20 years in the media research industry. I started off in ITV, which is the main commercial channel in the UK. At that time, it was regional, emerging to become almost a single entity in the UK. And I moved from ITV to Eurosport to Sky. And my last job in media research was for 10 years, I headed up media research for the public service part of the BBC for television, radio and online. And then after 20 years of giving people advice on what they should be doing in their businesses to make them successful within the media world, I fancied running something. So I moved to Clearcast, where I headed the business which pre-clears television advertising in the UK. So a different part of the same industry, really, with actually many of the same stakeholders. And I did that for 12 years. What attracted me back to RSMB? Well, it's a really interesting time, isn't it, in the media industry. Challenging in many ways, particularly at the moment. But, you know, as we move towards a more holistic view of the consumer, some of the challenges there and opportunities for a company like RSMB, which is, you know, a data specialist, a data integration specialist, if you like, seemed too good to miss. And I joined in February, just before, about 3 weeks before lockdown started in the UK.
So what do you see your mission as being at RSMB? What are your priorities for the company coming into the role?
Obviously, to deliver or continue to deliver excellent service to our existing clients who are wide ranging. Obviously, we're best known for the work that we do with the industry bodies, particularly Barb and Radio in the UK, TV and radio measurement bodies. But we have a much wider range of clients. We're working with Sky, for example, on Seaflight, which is their cross media. Media modeling tool. So primarily to continue to take on the amazing work that Steve's done, and he has an excellent team of people, we have an excellent team of people at RSMB delivering the service, and continue to develop and evolve the service, really. The world is changing rapidly, as we all know, and the world of statistics or data science, however you want to look at it, is continuing to evolve and become more important. And I think RSMB has quite an important role to play in doing that in the media space.
Now, obviously, you weren't anticipating walking with a few weeks into one of the biggest global crises since World War II, but also very specifically a bit of a crisis for the research industry in terms of, in particular, the industry currencies and how they continue in the UK and around the world. Would I be right in saying that whilst for some companies this crisis has meant less work, is this actually meaning more work for you in terms of the methodological challenges that your clients are facing and having to work on new approaches to doing things and actually extending what you're doing? Or is it still early days to judge?
I think it's a mix of things, to be honest. A number of things are operating business as usual. We continue to do quality control calls, for example. That much easier to reach panel members in their homes at the moment because they're not going out so much. Some of them are delighted for a bit of distraction, others perhaps not so much. We continue to do universe production, quality control of inputs, panel indicators, stuff like that. So in many ways, it's business as usual. Some of the work that we would normally be expected to do, obviously things like reviewing the establishment survey data as it comes in and doing some quality control data on that. That's something that we're not able to do at the moment. But you're absolutely right. Of course, in other areas, we are doing more work. We're looking at the panel in kind of more frequently. The quality control work is becoming more important, making sure that the rim weighting is working effectively. Actually, the panel's holding up pretty well, but as you'd expect, there's a little bit of attrition as time goes on. And actually, what's more important is not the quantity of the panel, but the quality of the panel. So making sure that we monitor and kind of track that on an ongoing basis is something we're spending a lot more time on. That's on the barb side of things. And obviously on the radar side of things, where it's not a panel, where there's ongoing field work, obviously radar are doing a lot of thinking at the moment about how they're going to produce data in the next quarter, and as you'd expect, we'd be fully involved in that.
We've been talking to a number of currencies around the world, and it's interesting that the two factors that are the biggest determinants of how worried they are at the moment, if that's the way to put it, is one, whether they use face-to-face interviewing, and two, whether their approach is passive measurement or recall measurement. Take the first one first. I mean, in terms of the long-term future of face-to-face interviewing, which clearly, particularly the UK, which is why two, if not three, of the currencies have more or less ground to a halt, is because of their reliance on face-to-face as the acknowledged gold standard for doing this sort of thing. Do you think this is going to be a bit of a sea change in people's attitude to possible alternatives, particularly if the crisis reoccurs? We may be going through this again in 2 years' time or 3 years' time, and people may want something that's more future-proof. It doesn't stop overnight.
I think we continue to be champions for face-to-face interviewing. And I think there's good reasons why that should continue to be the case going forward for you know, other things being equal. If we were to return to a steady state world somewhere along the lines of what we had it before, or it would make good sense. I think we absolutely have to be open and prepared for future challenges, as you suggest, because this may come back. And I think we have an intermediate challenge, which is returning to normal, even if lockdown is relaxed, even if people are back on the streets in some way, shape or form. I think there are going to be factors that are going to come into play. The elderly may well continue to be advised to isolate. People may be less willing to have strangers in their homes. And that will affect face-to-face to a greater or lesser extent that isn't necessarily obvious at the moment. So I think the answer to your question is, face-to-face is preferable, but necessity may mean that we have to consider other things or a blend of things as well. So it's not entirely clear at the moment, but certainly I think random probability sampling is still the preferred approach that we feel is appropriate for the current season.
And the second challenge that I'm guessing face-to-face interviewing faces is coming out of the medical crisis, as it were. More than likely, we're heading into an economic crisis where, in particular, I think ITV announced today that 40% of advertising had disappeared over the last couple of months, and it may take some time to come back. I mean, there will be a bounce back, but there will be a lot of companies struggling to hit targets and so on, and looking at ad budgets. That indirectly, not exclusively, as you'll know, as a former BBC person, advertising doesn't 100% fund currency measurement. There's also, subscription and public service broadcast funding, but it is an important element. And if there are pressures on currencies to cost cut, given the possible challenges in reinstating face-to-face interviewing, is there I'm not expecting to say on this podcast, but is there a preferred alternative? Is it a hybrid approach to contacting people? I guess from your perspective, the most important elements are to have a representative sample frame and to contact as much of it with as high a response rate as you can by the most appropriate technique.
I think that's right. I don't think there's a single obvious short-term alternative to it, put it that way. I think you're absolutely right about the challenges facing the broadcasters at the moment, and hopefully it's not existential, but you know, it may well be for some of them. So it's something that everyone's going to have to consider very, very carefully. An awful lot of money is traded off the back of Barb, and as a percentage, Barb is a relatively, I'm taking television obviously, but as a percentage, Barb is a relatively small proportion of that. And it's obviously a wise and worthwhile investment, and the credibility of the currency is sort of most important overall. But you're right, I think there will be pressure to look at overheads and ways in which cost efficiencies can take place. But they may not be on the currencies as we currently know them and see them. You know, Barb, we're in the midst of a tender process. We obviously don't know at this stage what they were thinking about in terms of panel sizes and so forth. So the counterfactual may not be what is today, but may be what could have been or would have been. And we obviously, certainly as contractors, don't know that at the moment. I think the industries will think very carefully before throwing away currencies that are, you know, well regarded and well traded for something that's unknown. I think you're more likely to see something that evolves, will continue to evolve. And that is what you'd expect anyway, particularly as IP television continues to build, for example, and more data is collected by Return Path. So I think the media world is evolving. Currencies will have to continue to evolve. By their nature, they're not things that evolve very quickly. Partly the answer to your question will depend on how long this crisis continues and how long it takes to get back to normal, and that remains to be seen.
It's interesting from a UK perspective, when we've been interviewing various other currencies around the world for a compilation podcast we're hopefully issuing next week, that how few TV currencies now do use face-to-face, either for recruitment or for the establishment surveys, which I'd probably argue is not because they think that it's a better approach to use. I think it's been pragmatic economic reasons or the size of the country, you know, what they've been able to afford in terms of the size of their industries. But I think it's going to be interesting to monitor whether that does change attitudes or not, specifically when it comes to establishment surveys, because I'm guessing in the absence of an ongoing establishment survey in the UK at the moment, that if this is protracted, as you say, there will be a need to understand, are people's behaviour in terms of access to devices, subscription to streaming services changing as a result of the crisis? Can we rely on the actual weighting targets you're applying, or will there need to be some sort of temporary or emergency measure to try and work out or model what the universe is?
I think in the short term, we possibly have to accept there's some noise in the system, and full representation right now in terms of, you know, additional equipment people may be picking up or devices they may be using may not be fully captured. The data currently suggests that actually that's not a significant impact. We're certainly not seeing that as much as you might expect, perhaps from talking to panel homes, for example. You know, there are other things we can expect in the short term. Who knows what's happening with employment status at the moment, for example. And it may take a while for us as a kind of research community to work through some of the implications of COVID and understand some of this stuff. And I think what you're partly asking is, are we going to have to move faster and be more dynamic than something like an establishment survey allows us to be. To trade against that, there is the amazing representativeness you get on that, which allows us to construct a panel that is highly representative and can be room weighted in a way that produces very accurate weighting. So I think it would be rash to react very quickly to the situation we're in right now. But as you expect, those discussions and those questions are being asked and discussed at the moment and thought through.
Also wondering somewhat randomly whether it may accelerate the ongoing crisis, economic crisis after this, and also the challenges of the new normal, as people are starting to call it, whether that might accelerate conversations around increased sharing of resources between the currencies, certainly when it comes to, for example, the establishment survey, whether there was a way, there was just a UK establishment survey that was used for everything, which I think is possibly the way the Dutch are planning to go. So it might be a way of preserving gold standard, but perhaps becoming slightly more communal in how the media industry as a whole gathers data and then you sort of packets it for each of its own use, as it were.
I think that's something that might well be considered, and there are some benefits over time to try and linking up more information from the different currencies, particularly as more information is being fused or modeled through things like touchpoints. So there are definite benefits over time of doing that. There are other resources. I guess the BBC has a cross-media panel. There may be ways in which they may want to utilize that more widely for the benefit of the industry and perhaps have it co-funded, given the cost issues that they currently have. So I think those questions will definitely be asked, and I think there are both cost benefits of considering those and also potentially some benefits in terms of data harmonization. But primarily, every GIC is going to be thinking about its own media measurement currency and making sure that it gets what it needs to get out of it. And those trade-offs will need to be considered. But I certainly wouldn't rule that out.
Mm. I think the other parameter I mentioned when we've been chatting with other countries has been a slight feeling that the attraction of passive measurement has been increased by the crisis. The feeling that makes you slightly more crisis proof if you are, a good example. I mean, I think I've got my chronology right. You would have been at the BBC during the Kelvin McKenzie portable meter wars,
yeah.
Which in the end weren't adopted by Rajal, but are adopted, in US, Canada, and a fair bit of Scandinavia, where to a certain extent they're continuing to produce weight data in a way that Rajal can't. I'm just wondering, this isn't a Rajal question, this is a general sort of supposition, as it were, that this might make people start to evaluate not just the sort of the gold standard nature of their services, but also their robustness to continue in a time of crisis, and certainly electronic measurement, and to a certain degree as well. I know you're involved via Sky and other companies in terms of looking at return path data and set-top box data, server data, and I guess to a certain degree radio streaming data as sources of continuity if a crisis happens.
I think you are right in that people will look at what alternatives they have to kind of protect them from this sort of crisis going forward. Rajal, for example, in the UK has evolved the way it has because we've got a very complex, very local, very regional radio map here. And a panel of some sort probably wouldn't be affordable, or certainly, in the past was not considered to be affordable to deliver that granularity of data. Having said that, technology has moved on, time has moved on, we've got personal devices. I mean, the Kelvin McKenzie meter at the time, of course, at the time there were questions about false positives and false negatives and compliance and so forth. And there were good reasons at the time why that decision wasn't made. But, you know, time's moved on. There's a lot more networking now in commercial radio in particular. And the way that media is traded is also evolving. So there may well be reasons why, in addition to financial reasons, why those things should be considered again. You know, a company like RSNB, for example, we're agnostic to that. Our role would be to make sure that the data is as representative as it can be, given the choices made by the industry bodies. Something like that would involve a big step change, and I guess that's something else that the industry would have to consider and prepare itself for. And I would expect a move from diaries to any form of metering would be a significant step change. It certainly happened in other markets, and there'd be a lot of discussion and preparation for that.
So I guess you'd see your role as we come out of this and alternatives are being considered as really being a neutral guide to clients to say, you know, if you do this, this is the advantages and the disadvantages, and also, you know, judge as it were as to its statistical robustness. But at the end of the day, they take the decisions armed with your expert opinion.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, our role in a broad sense is to get the best possible solutions we can, given whatever measurement constraints or data constraints there are. And it doesn't matter whether you're looking at Barb or CFI or anything else. You know, we'll try and find the best solution given what's trying to be achieved. There are a number of different steps, of course, in what we're talking about. And you're right, you know, modelling the effect of a change, whatever that change may be, to inform decision making is an important part of that. And then if you're going to make that change, then trying to work out how best to weight it, how best to stratify the sample or whatever you might consider. So there are a number of different steps, and there are a number of different ways that we would get involved as a company like RSNB. But what we're trying to do with the currencies is produce the best outcome that is possible. And every currency has got constraints. It doesn't matter what it is. Financial constraints are significant. And, you know, we've been quite creative, I think, over the years in making the most of particular panel sizes, upweighting particular demographics, for example, 16 to 24s on Barb, downweighting maybe less traded audiences. And you just have to be as creative and thoughtful as you can whilst maintaining statistical integrity. And I guess, you know, part of our role is to be champions for statistical integrity.
And to quote a former colleague of mine, now retired, Bill Blythe, who always used to talk a lot about market research being driven by fitness for purpose. So at the end of the day, it's that trade-off between, you know, quality, what you can afford, but also getting the best possible quality for what you can afford. So I think just one final question that we've been asking people, because it's again something that's emerged from the conversations we've been having. Yeah, just from a purely RSNB perspective, how has this impacted the way that you do business? And are there any aspects of how you've been coping with the crisis that might actually be, you know, opportunities for smarter working in the future? You know, obviously it's been a very forced move to home working, but are there some aspects of this that you can see as ways in which they may impact how you do business in the future?
You know what? I think for us, not a huge amount has changed. You know, we are doing the job that we've done from home. And it's gone pretty smoothly, actually, which is reassuring. We haven't had to reinvent the way that, you know, we haven't had to reinvent the way that sampling is done, or, you know, we don't have face-to-face teams to consider. So, because generally speaking, we're working with data, it's been relatively straightforward for us to move quite seamlessly. There are things that I think we've lost in terms of communication and brainstorming, things that, you know, being able to come together in the office do facilitate, and you can do those to an extent by things like Zoom, as we are now. but they're not ideal. But I think it's fair to say we haven't had a sort of eureka moment on doing things enormously differently. And in a sense, I think that's reassuring, because I think we should be following best practice the whole time. And, you know, a crisis can make you think incredibly creatively, but it hasn't affected us in the way that perhaps it's affected some of the other fieldwork suppliers, providers, or research companies. I mean, we are much more a data science business, I guess, than a fieldwork business. We're not a fieldwork business at all. So other than our panel management teams who are, you know, working on the phone anyway, it hasn't really touched the way that we do things when we're not contacting members of the public in the way that other research companies are.
Well, thanks for your time talking to us today. We'll let you get on, but it's been great catching up with you. Sadly, we won't be able to catch up in November, because we're, like Glastonbury, we're having a fallow year to sit this one out, but no doubt we'll be in touch before then. So thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Steve.